all of us, whether it's in Los Angeles or El Salvador, where we've just heard your segments and bless your show for covering these issues, or in Gaza. Silence does not protect us. Silence does not ensure that we will be okay. It's quite the opposite. Silence ensures the injustice spreads. I dedicated my entire adult life to diplomacy because I'm fundamentally a peacemaker. But unfortunately, I saw after 20 years, almost 20 years of service, that there is some institutionalized corruption within our government that profits from war at all costs, that profits from genocide. And at this point, when we're seeing starvation, absolute starvation of civilians in Gaza while they are simultaneously being bombarded, words are no longer enough. I've been on your show. I've done interviews with you. I've done interviews on dozens, if not hundreds, of networks across the world. At this point, we need action. That's why I'm joining over 3,000 other human beings that want to help their fellow human beings from over 50 countries. We're going to arrive to Cairo on Thursday, and then go to Al Arish the next day, and then walk from Al Arish to Rafah in a show of human solidarity, because we cannot live in a world where we as human beings accept other human beings being forcibly starved.
Khala Rarit, we have to leave it there, but we'd like to ask you to stay so we can do a post show and post it online at democracynow.org. Khala Rarit is participating in the Gaza walk from Cairo to Rafah. She's an 18-year career diplomat.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Camp KBOO is now in session. Sign up to support us during our summer membership drive now through June 29th. All you have to do is check out kboo.fm/give, text KBOO to 44321, or mail us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, and support a summer of memories together.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, the Department of State Lands has paused the Sandy River Delta sweeps for now. Washington is feeling the effects of a new rent stabilization law, and RF Kennedy's aide might have a conflict of interest. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, June 10, 2025. KBOO is currently in our summer membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Eric Leuschner. Immigrant rights advocates continue to urge Oregon legislators to pass the 2025 Immigrant Justice Package. The suite of bills would guarantee immigrant families access to housing, food, legal representation, and other supports. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
In response to increasing federal threats to immigrant communities, including cuts to food assistance and deportations, a coalition of over 100 community organizations is urging Oregon's lawmakers to pass the 2025 Immigrant Justice Package. It includes five bills that would provide Oregon's immigrant families access to things like food and housing assistance, disaster relief, and legal representation. Oregon Worker Relief Coalition President Martha Sonato says the legislation will benefit all Oregonians.
What community has put forward is a package of very impactful cost-saving investments. These are all basic rights that really help families stay together and succeed.
Opponents to some of the measures argue it's unfair to ask legal residents to fund benefits for people in the country illegally. Supporters, however, counter that undocumented Oregonians contribute over $350 million annually in state and local taxes, making them deserving of these benefits. From the package, Sonato highlights a bill to create a farmworker disaster relief fund. She says Oregon farmworkers, over 60% of which are immigrants, face lost wages due to extreme weather like heat waves and wildfires.
Farm worker disaster relief would really help make sure that farm workers are able to take care of themselves and their families, just like they're taking care of all of us.
Another bill in the package, Food for All Oregonians, would provide food benefits to all children in the state, regardless of their immigration status. The measures also seek funding to renew a legal aid program for immigrants, which Sonato says is crucial in today's climate.
This policy ensures that folks have due process by providing legal representation to immigrants that are seeking to adjust their status and facing deportation.
Sonato stresses that investments in immigrant communities now will save the state money in emergency food, housing, and medical resources down the road. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
The Department of State Lands announced that they will be pausing the sweeps at the Sandy River Delta to reevaluate the project. The sweeps started at the beginning of June, with private contractors entering camps and beginning to dispose of residents' belongings. Videos were published of private contractors hired by DSL, macing community members who came to support the residents of the camp. Many of the people living there have been there for decades, and some were reportedly dropped there by county law enforcement after being released from jail. The story is ongoing, but there have been no further updates from the Department of State Lands as of today, July 10th. The Point Puzzle is a weekly puzzle. Every week, a winner from the last week will be selected from emailed answers and announced on air, and a new puzzle will be posed. Now it's time for Point Puzzle with Pearl Stark.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, I asked you for an artist who is often referred to by one name. Reverse the letters in the name, and phonetically, you have one adjective that might describe this artist. Well, the answer is Tupac. Reverse the letters, and you get kaput. Our winner this week is Daryl McKeel, who listens to KYAQ in Newport, Oregon.
Go out with artists. They talk about language and the cubists and the daddies, and I try to catch their meanings.
Well, we've had a bunch of hard puzzles in a row lately, so here's an easier one. For Father's Day, send me a verb that you might use while fly fishing with your dad that is also a noun you might give to him as a gift. So again, send me a verb that you might use while fly fishing with your dad that is also a noun you might give to him as a gift. When you have an answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
So you'll always know, as long as one and one is two. There could never be a father loved his daughter more than I love you.
This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of June 9th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
California sues the Trump administration over federalizing the National Guard. Trump invokes an 1807 law to justify sending the Guard and Marines to California, and a Texas representative plans to force a vote on articles of impeachment against the president. With that story and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Streets were mostly quiet and calm. Since Trump announced his plan to deploy troops, the situation on the ground has escalated quickly, with unrest growing overnight, causing highways to close and putting people in danger.
California Attorney General Rob Bonta and Governor Gavin Newsom announced they'll sue President Donald Trump's administration for federalizing 2,000 members of the California National Guard. Hundreds of people in downtown Los Angeles and San Francisco have been protesting against workplace immigration raids with numerous arrests. LA city officials say police had the situation under control and the conflict actually got worse when the Guard arrived. Bonta and Newsom argue Trump has violated the 10th Amendment, which gives states all powers not expressly granted to the federal government. The last time a president deployed a state's National Guard without a governor's permission was 1965. President Lyndon Johnson federalized the Alabama National Guard to protect Selma to Montgomery's civil rights marchers over objections from Governor George Wallace. In 2020, during national civil unrest, Trump said, "We have to go by the laws. We can't call in the National Guard unless we're requested by a governor." But now he's justifying his moves in part by saying Newsom is incompetent.
He's destroying one of our great states. And if I didn't get involved, if we didn't bring the Guard in, and we would bring more in if we needed it, because we have to make sure there's going to be law and order.
The president says he feels Newsom may deserve to be arrested. Responding to reports some demonstrators spat on police, Trump said, "They spit, we hit." Importantly, Trump has also deployed 700 Marines to LA, which will probably be challenged as a violation of a key federal law against using active duty troops inside the U.S. Trump's characterization of the California protesters as insurrectionists suggests he may invoke the Insurrection Act of 1807, which would give him broad authority to use the military inside the country. Newsom argues the Marines are finding there's actually very little for them to do. Democrats say Trump's actions are a dramatic abuse of power. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says the right to protest is guaranteed in the First Amendment, but people not protesting peacefully should face legal consequences.
The right to peacefully assemble, to express themselves to the government in order to bring about change in this country is a fundamental American principle, and we will continue to stand behind it.
Jeffries cites Trump's pardoning of January 6th insurrectionists to say the president has no credibility on law and order. Texas Democratic Representative Al Green says he will force a vote on articles of impeachment against Trump. He introduced them in mid-May, saying the president is a threat to American democracy. Green calls Congress the court of last resort.
There is but one solution to an authoritarian president that cannot be controlled by the Supreme Court because he flouts the orders of the Supreme Court, that won't be controlled by members of his party because he has control over the party.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You are listening to a summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29th. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during the program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. At 6 o'clock, it's This Way Out. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be a high of 80 degrees and a low of 55, and tomorrow it will be a high of 76 degrees and a low of 54. Today in history, in 1752, Benjamin Franklin flew a kite in a thunderstorm and collected ambient electrical charges. The quote of the day is from Albert Einstein. He said, quote, "No amount of experimentation can ever prove me right. A single experiment can prove me wrong." In Montana, the FBI and Crow Tribe are working together to offer $10,000 for information in the disappearance of Suede Birding Ground, a teenage girl who's been missing from the Crow Reservation for 8 months. With that on the story and more, it's Brian Bull with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. In Montana, the FBI and Crow Tribe are working together to offer $10,000 for information in the disappearance of Suede Birding Ground, a teenage girl who's been missing from the Crow Reservation for 8 months. YPR's Jackie Coffin has more from Crow Agency.
For its third consecutive year, the FBI has surged resources to its bureaus that serve Indian country as part of Operation Not Forgotten, an effort in part to investigate cases of missing and murdered indigenous people. This year's effort will see increased personnel working out of the Billings Field Office covering the nearby Crow and Northern Cheyenne tribal nations. For the Crow tribe, the surge means a flow of badly needed resources to look for missing people, including 13-year-old Suede Birding Ground, who was last seen by her family in Gary Owen on October 6th. Her father, Wade Birding Ground, remembers the last words he heard from her.
It was a Sunday. I was in Billings. You know, I was out. It was kind of late. She called me, telling me, you know, good night, I love you. And she always texts on me, you know.
On Friday, FBI agents from the Salt Lake City Bureau, which covers Montana, joined Suede's family, friends, and local and tribal leadership in law enforcement in Crow Agency to announce new resources in the search for Suede. FBI Special Agent in Charge, Maytab Syed.
The FBI is offering a $5,000 reward for information that leads to her recovery.
Crow Tribal Chairman Frank Whiteclay announced the tribe would match the money. Together, FBI agents and tribal members carried red balloons on a walk around the Little Bighorn College to honor Suede. And with her father, Wade, holding on to hope, the reward brings her home.
I love you. I know you're out there. I'm not giving up.
In Crow Agency, I'm Jackie Coffin.
This week, tribal leaders from across the country are gathered on the homeland of the Mashantucket Pequot Tribal Nation in Connecticut for the National Congress of American Indians Mid-Year Convention. Leaders are addressing top issues facing their communities and advancing tribal priorities for NCEI to advocate on their behalf. Monday's agenda included a discussion about the Indian Health Service, violence against women, and Native education. Among concerns of attendees are recent actions by the Trump administration, including possible funding cuts to federal programs and services for tribes. Rodney Butler, chairman of the Mashantucket Pequot Tribal Nation, says of the NCAI gathering is a place to interact with government officials, fellow tribal leaders, and other stakeholders in Indian country. He adds that indigenous people are resilient and have been through many tough times.
We are born out of perseverance, and we will get beyond these moments, right? That's the most important thing in sharing in that. But also recognizing that there are some opportunities, even in the clouds that we're seeing. And so, like, the interim Assistant Secretary of Interior will be here, Scott Davis, and he's going to talk a lot about what tribes can do with this administration and, you know, in advancing sovereignty, in growing our tribal economies, and other areas where their priorities do overlap, not perfectly with ours, but there's certainly opportunity in there. And so that's a lot of what we're talking about, and just sharing, you know, the war stories of, you know, how did you navigate this scenario with your grant reductions and what's the best path forward? And you see a lot of that. And that's the beauty of NCI, broadly speaking, is just being able to share those experiences with sister tribal nations, and we all learn from each other.
Tuesday's agenda includes conversations about Native child and family well-being, Indigenous determinants of health, and NCAI Native American Rights Fund priorities. The NCAI Convention and Marketplace continues through Wednesday. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull.
Kay Allie Means, a top aide to Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., was hired as a White House advisor in March. He has used his position to attack a variety of leading physician groups, federal agencies, and government scientists, claiming they are only out to protect their own interests. Means, however, has his own financial stake in the health system. As co-founder of an online platform, TrueMed, that offers dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and other so-called wellness products. Some of the vendors featured on the TrueMed website support Kennedy's Make America Healthy Again movement, which downplays the benefits of prescription drugs and vaccines. In recent appearances, Means had called the American Medical Association a pharma lobbying group, stated the Food and Drug Administration is a sock puppet of industry, and opined that federal health scientists have, quote, overseen a record of utter failure. Kennedy pledged to run the Department of Health and Human Services with a radical transparency, but Means never publicly disclosed his own financial details. Experts believe he is representing an industry that touts non-regulated products and alleged he may be using his platform within the government to financially benefit himself. In a written statement, Means previously said his government work has not dealt with matters affecting TrueMed, but rather focused on issues like reforming nutrition programs and pressuring companies to decrease food dye use. TrueMed helps people take tax-free money out of their health savings accounts, or HSAs, to spend on things that would not normally qualify as a medical expense, such as exercise equipment, meal delivery services, and homeopathic remedies. The Internal Revenue Service issued an alert last year saying, quote, "Beware of companies misrepresenting nutrition, wellness, and general health expenses as medical care." TrueMed said in a statement the company is in full alignment with IRS guidelines. The full extent of Mean's potential conflicts are unclear because of his status as a special government employee. Unlike presidential appointees and other senior officials, special government employees are temporary staffers who do not have to leave companies or sell investments that could be impacted by their work, and their financial disclosure forms are not released to the public. Nonetheless, even part-time government employees are subject to the same laws that bar all federal staffers from working on issues that could directly benefit their finances. Means regularly weighs in on matters before the HHS, including using drugs for depression, weight loss, diabetes, and other conditions. Recently, he promoted a new government report that calls for scaling back prescription medications in favor of exercise, dietary changes, and other alternatives. The MAHA movement itself urges followers to distrust big corporations and the government agencies which regulate them. Means particularly has been railing against big pharma and food conglomerates. He has no medical training, previously running a bridal gown startup with his wife. His sister, Casey Means, was recently nominated to be Surgeon General and has faced scrutiny over her qualifications, including dropping out of her surgical residency at OHSU, allegedly because it was too stressful. The immediate future of global trade policy appears to be changing by the minute as the Trump administration remains focused on introducing new tariffs. New survey data shows financial firms serving some of the nation's biggest companies are pessimistic about the U.S. economy. Mike Moen has more on the story.
Optimism is falling and pessimism is rising among businesses getting a read on the U.S. economy, that according to a new national survey. The findings are from the Center for Audit Quality, which gathered feedback from the nation's leading public company audit firms. The firms serve clients in a wide range of industries, from retail to mining. The spring survey shows pessimism about the U.S. economy surged to 44% compared to just 10% last fall. Meanwhile, optimism fell to 15%. The center's Julie Bell Lindsay says there are a handful of key factors behind those sentiments.
Concern about a recession, ongoing geopolitical instability, and tariff uncertainty. Those are the top three areas where audit partners are seeing companies concerned over the next 12 months.
The Trump administration says it remains undeterred in applying broad-based tariffs in pursuit of fair trade. Financial analysts say that approach creates less predictability for businesses with the potential for layoffs, adding some of the tariff policies have resulted in legal setbacks. White House officials hope tariffs lead to more domestic manufacturing, but experts caution that could take years. 54% of respondents said companies in their sectors are reducing employee headcounts in the current economic landscape, but nearly half also are making an effort to boost the skills of existing staff. Bell Lindsay adds that artificial intelligence has major appeal right now.
The companies in the industries that they audit are mainly pursuing the use of AI to enhance customer experiences, services and support, as well as automate some work processes.
Despite the Trump administration's interest in cryptocurrency, survey results show American companies feel the situation isn't right yet to jump into those markets. 96% of respondents said their clients aren't having talks right now about that type of investment. This is Mike Moen for United States News Service.
Washington renters are already feeling the positive impacts of Washington's new rent stabilization law, which caps annual rent increases to no more than 10%. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
Governor Ferguson has signed Washington's first rent stabilization law, and renters and advocates who fought for the bill are breathing sighs of relief. The new law caps the amount that landlords can raise yearly rents at 7% plus inflation, or 10%, whichever is less. For manufactured homes, increases are limited to 5%. The move comes after years of advocacy by renters like Carolyn Hardy, a retiree in Aberdeen whose manufactured home community faced up to 50% yearly increases under new corporate ownership. She says her community is mostly seniors living on fixed incomes, and the increases had become untenable.
It was getting to the point where people were skipping meals and they were not able to afford prescriptions. I couldn't afford my diabetic medicine. It was getting scary. We're getting mad.
Landlords associations and real estate agencies fought hard against the bill, saying it would impede development. Proponents counter that under the law, new construction is protected from the cap for the first 12 years. Hardy spent 3 years knocking on doors, making phone calls, and testifying in support of the new law. She says she was deeply relieved to hear that it passed and grateful to Senator Emily Alvarado and Senator Yasmin Trudeau, who sponsored the bill.
We were so thankful that they listened to us and they helped us. It was a great accomplishment. We're really proud of ourselves.
9 Washington counties had record-breaking eviction rates in 2024. The state now joins Oregon and California as the only states in the nation to enact a statewide limit on how much landlords can raise the rent. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
A civil rights leader links climate change to racial justice. Reverend Dr. Gerald Durley says the fight for clean air and a safe environment is linked to the battle for racial equity. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Since joining the civil rights movement as a student in Tennessee more than 60 years ago, Reverend Dr. Gerald Durley has been fighting for racial justice. And he says today, fighting climate change and fossil fuel pollution is a critical piece of that struggle.
In order for us to really move ahead in civil rights, you've got to have an environment that is healthy and safe.
But Black and brown communities are more likely to be located near factories and power plants that burn fossil fuels, so they're more at risk from air pollution that worsens asthma and other health problems. And they're disproportionately exposed to dangerous heat waves, floods, and other climate impacts. So Durley says the civil rights and climate movements are linked.
Both movements want the same thing, the quality of life.
And he urges people to take action on climate change with the same passion and determination that have propelled civil rights activists for decades.
Now we organize, we strategize, and we mobilize. We come together across colors, across genders, across organizational lines for this effort. When people believe in something strong enough, we will see change.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Donald Trump finally got his conversation with China's leader, but Xi Jinping was the one who seems to have won concessions. Both sides agreed to resume trade talks, probably the best that Trump could have hoped for. He'll have to get his house in order if the U.S. is to negotiate with China on a level playing field. Now we go to Global Citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. President Trump finally got his wish for a conversation with Xi Jinping. Or perhaps I should say that President Xi granted Trump an audience. The Chinese leader has no doubt been energized by the adverse reaction to Trump's tariffs inside as well as outside the U.S. The tariffs have clearly put Trump in a difficult bargaining position, just where Xi wants him. That suggests an evaluation of the conversation different from the media's, which have optimistically said the U.S. and China are now sure to make progress on trade and can put the tariff war behind them. I think otherwise. To judge from the readouts provided by each side, Xi had a lot more to say than Trump. Xi stressed that a course correction in China-U.S. relations is especially important, using the metaphor of a ship with two helmsmen. A consensus on trade has been reached, said Xi, but many steps remain to be taken. Quote, The U.S. should look at the progress made in a realistic way and withdraw the negative measures taken against China. The two sides should enhance exchanges in various fields, such as diplomacy, economy and trade, military affairs, and law enforcement. Enhance consensus, reduce misunderstandings, and strengthen cooperation, unquote. By contrast, the U.S. readout merely noted that, quote, the two leaders discussed numerous topics. Representatives of the U.S. and China will engage in discussions and negotiations on various issues of mutual interest, unquote. Not exactly a menu for future action. Xi seems to have extracted two commitments from Trump that diverge from actual U.S. policy. First, according to the Chinese readout, Trump said he, quote, welcomes Chinese students coming to the U.S. to study. U.S. policy, in fact, most recently articulated by Secretary of State Marco Rubio, calls for the U.S. to aggressively revoke Chinese student visas if the student has a connection to the Chinese Communist Party or whose study is in a critical field, meaning advanced technology. The administration is clearly hostile to international students in general. Second, the Chinese readout says, quote, the U.S. will continue to support the One China policy, the one specific policy mentioned in the U.S. readout. But while One China is a long-standing official U.S. policy, in practice, the U.S. continues to provide substantial military and political support to Taiwan at a time when Taiwan's new president frequently refers to the country's sovereignty. That is why Xi, according to the Chinese readout, quote, emphasized that the U.S. should prudently handle the Taiwan issue and avoid letting an extremely small number of Taiwan independence separatist elements drag China and the United States into a dangerous situation of conflict and confrontation. Neither readout mentions China's restrictions on rare earth exports, a key issue in trade relations with the U.S. and many other countries. Yet Trump wrote on social media as though the issue was being resolved. He said there should no longer be any questions respecting the complexity of rare earth products. We had a very good talk and we've straightened out any complexity. I think we're in very good shape with China and the trade deal, unquote. You would think that the U.S. readout would have mentioned this win for Trump. The fact that it didn't suggests that straightened out hardly reflects the actual situation. The Chinese response most likely was a matter of wait and see what Trump offers in return for resumption of rare earth exports. Any notion that a breakthrough has occurred on trade or that bilateral relations have now been significantly reduced is simply wrong. The best that can be said is that the two sides are talking. A second round is scheduled for June 9, rather than engaging in competitive tariff hikes and playing the blame game. The main sources of current tension, which include Taiwan, tensions in the South China Sea, Chinese aid to Russia in the Ukraine war, fentanyl, people-to-people exchanges, and human rights, as well as tariffs and trade, are no less serious now than